Statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, on a beautiful Monday afternoon, welcome to the Who's Who in Philly Davis Show, sponsored by Weinemann Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors of Serious Injuries. I'm your host, Joe Dougherty. We got an awesome show today. We have a great friend of mine, Chris Woods, president of District 1199C. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Joe.
It's great
to see you again, man.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You know, Chris is he's not only a great friend, but a great labor leader and you know, somebody who's a trailblazer here in the industry in Philly, and we got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the election. We're going to talk about all kinds of things, tomorrow's election. We also have Paul Himmel of Friedman Lawyer. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Joe.
Paul is one of our trailblazers in workers' compensation industry here in Philadelphia. Takes care of the injured union workers in the city of Philadelphia. Does a great job. Certified workers' compensation specialist. Runs the workers' compensation department at Friedman Lawyer, one of our great union firms, and certainly a great friend to labor.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Paul. By the way, Paul was also one of our Who's Who and Injured Workers Advocacy nominated and by our Injured Workers Board of Directors and honored at City Hall a few years ago. So it's great to have one of our top people on. That gives us the opportunity to spotlight who we think are the best injury attorneys in the city, and Paul's absolutely one of them. All right, guys, before we get into the election and all kinds of other things, let's talk a little bit about the Eagles game yesterday, because we're talking about it off air and we're going to talk about it now. Chris and I was unsolicited texting them back and forth during the game yesterday. And both of you saw the game. We're talking about a lot of things. Overall impressions, Chris?
We got some work that needs to be done. I think we snuck it out, but going forward to compete in our division, we're going to have to tweak a few things, and hopefully we can get some of our guys back. I don't think Deshaun was fully ready. We got the bye coming up. I think we should have probably held him out till after the bye, and let's get ready for the Patriots.
I mean, I completely agree with that. I was watching, you know, and I was thinking the same exact thing even before the game, like, you know, and we had to win yesterday's game, and I think in some cases we played it very conservatively. What were your impressions of the game, Paul?
Well, similar to Chris's, I mean, I think it's very important to stay healthy, and then I think it's important to keep momentum. Usually the Eagles going into the second half have a lot of momentum. I felt yesterday that they were losing that momentum. But at the very end, they, you know, were able to hold out, you know, and win the game. But I think keeping the receivers healthy, keeping the team healthy and keeping the momentum going is going to be key to moving forward into the playoffs.
Absolutely. You know, it's with pro football, one of the crazy things, I mean, you work so hard, you put together your team and all, you draft in first round players, you get all these things, you spend your whole offseason putting together a team, you got your personnel department, but the injuries are so unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean it's you could lose, you know, your top guy, just like Eddie, may never play again.
Right, and they piled up on us this year with injuries, man. We had a lot of guys that's been out, and like I said, I think if we just get healthy and tweak a few things, we'll be okay. We'll be okay. I think we could still sneak out the division. One of the things that was telling yesterday, though, that, and I think when you look at the game, and you and I were texting back and forth, but there was a point in time where Chicago only had about 9 yards of total offense, and it was only a 12-0 game.
By the way, at one point early in the game, they only had 1 yard.
Right, it was incredible. But when you look at it, it was like, wow, we should be killing these guys. And you know, that's why I think we just got some stuff that we have to tweak and get better. And hopefully, we can get a lot of our guys healthy after the bye and come back and look ready for a second half push.
You know what? So you talk about you know what? You know what hits me most different this year, rather than the Super Bowl year? It's the play calling. Frank Reich is no longer there.
Yeah,
and I like Doug Peterson personally. He's a great guy, and he surrounds himself with good people. But with Carson Wentz, I'm just not a big fan of the 10 and out, you know, like real, like in other words, the standard, you know, there's no, like when you watch the Patriots, thank God they lost last night. You know, they have a lot of deception. They have a lot of short little patterns and stuff like that. It just seems like we lost some imagination in our offense.
I think creativity goes a long way in the NFL. To keep the defense on their, you know, off their toes, you know.
Yeah, so, right. Sure.
So I agree with that. I think the play calling could be have a little bit more imagination, you know, woven into it, and I think that would make the offense a little bit more productive.
Exactly. You saw Lamar Jackson last night, right? They're doing run pass option, yeah. RPOs the whole game, but they're not just doing, you know, I mean, he's running. I mean, first of all, he's a freak of nature. That guy is an unbelievable quarterback. I don't know if you guys know the story, but you know who his primary coach was growing up?
No.
His mom.
Wow.
His mom, and nobody gave his mom any crap. That's what I heard. I mean, in other words, she would put the pads on and all, and he said that when he won the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
And he was, by the way, he was the Eagles draft pick. He was the 30th pick of the draft. How that happened. You know, the last pick of the first round, the Eagles traded to Baltimore. And now we're going to be dealing with this kid for the next 10 years. You know,
but I think to your point, if you watch the game or other games around the league and you watch what some of the other teams do, they scheme to the advantages of the players that they have. And I think that's something that we could really take a look at. Like, you have to scheme and call a game that schemes to the players that you have. I mean, our stuff is too vanilla. People know our plays. They know what's coming before we even hike the ball on offense. And I think we got to do a better job with that, and we got to be aggressive. You know what I mean? I think if you look back to the Super Bowl year, and even the Super Bowl, we were really aggressive. We came out and we caught the Patriots. They were frozen with some of the play calling that we had. We caught them off guard.
Oh, you know? Yeah. And by the way, that's Frank Reich, in other words.
Yeah, we miss him a lot.
We miss him. And you know who took Frank Reich off his ball?
Who's that?
Bill Belichick. You know why?
Why?
Because his offensive coordinator got that job in Indianapolis. And the day before they had the press conference, he called them and said, don't take the job. And then it was the end. There was no other jobs open. And they took damn Frank Reich office, and now we're dealing with it. Don't get me wrong. He would have got another job. But, right. You know, it was a good combination, him and Doug. And now we're watching Carson, who needs that creativity. I mean, I'm just saying, how many 10 and outs you're going to run? It's just, it is what it is. So anyway, yeah. Let's see. A couple of weeks, we got the Patriots, and tonight Dallas plays the Giants. Tonight my favorite team is, of course, the Giants. we'll see what happens. Let's transition a little bit, Chris. If you would remind and tell our listeners, is this the first time you're on WWDB here with us?
I believe so.
Oh my God! By the way, Chris usually, we do other radio together, and it's usually at night, and so he never seen me during the daytime, and so I'm a pretty good looking guy, and I wouldn't just say, I mean, I'm just making a point.
You are a pretty handsome young man.
I paid him. But having said that, let's talk about tell our listeners about your career, what you do, who you represent.
Okay, Chris Woods, the president of District 1199C, Hospital Workers Union for Philadelphia counties and South Jersey. We represent a lot of members in South Jersey as well. Predominantly, we represent most of the hospital workers here in Philadelphia, but we do have a large growing population of employees or members that work in long-term care in the nursing facilities. We also have behavior and mental health, and we also represent the folks in the prisons as well in terms of health care.
And what amazes me about you guys, and more than anybody on the planet, is how many collective bargaining agreements you guys have. Now, Paul, you have experience in the labor community, and we have a lot of Philadelphia building trades, and some of those unions have different facets. Like the electricians have, you know, they have, you know, several different types of contracts that deal with, probably the most in our trade. But some of our unions have one collective bargaining agreement, and it's a serious thing, you know, that it covers all their members. You have how many that you're doing?
We have over 100 collective bargaining agreements with a number of different employers throughout the city and the counties.
And so that to me is just overwhelming. I don't know how you sleep, and your team is amazing. I love your team. Paul, if you would tell us, tell our listeners about, you know, about yourself, your career, and tell us a little bit about Freedman Loy.
Well, I've been practicing law for 28 years, Joe. I've dedicated my career to representing the working men and women of Philadelphia. A lot of them have been affiliated members of 1199C. The firm Freedman Loy is the oldest union side firm in the city. And throughout my 28 years working at the firm, I've dedicated my practice to different areas. I've represented health and welfare funds. I've represented injured workers. And we're essentially the supporting and advisor of injured workers when they've had issues. So it's not that every injured worker always has a case that ends up in court. It's essentially an education. It's leveling the playing field. So what I've been doing for throughout my 28 years is meeting with working men and women and advising them a lot of times. So a lot of cases don't end up in court, but they just need the advice and the education to make the appropriate decisions. And that's what I've been doing. I mean, I really find as a union lawyer, if I may refer to myself
sure.
as such, it's all about leveling the playing field because the employers have their lawyers and their advisors advising them.
Exactly.
And it's very, very important for the union to not only have advice for, as far as the union, as far as the health and welfare fund, but to make sure that education is out there for the members. And so that's what I've been doing, serving as an advisor for thousands of union members for 2.5 decades to make sure that there's a level playing field and they have the education, the information that they need to make decisions that will protect themselves and so that they can provide a living for them and their families.
And interesting, because it's all workers' rights, man. I mean, that's it. You know, it's a and in your particular industry, and I happen to know a decent amount about it, people get injured. They've been loyal to their employer for 20 years, 25, maybe a year. But either way, they expect that same loyalty back. But it's a totally different situation. You're dealing with a workers' comp situation that is very unfriendly to the worker. And you know, of course, like you said, not every case is a you know, filing for a claim. But I can tell you one thing: every injured worker needs advice from the point of injury, so that they do not leave their, you know, so that they don't leave their self open to what could possibly happen. And certainly, they don't. A lot of injured workers, if not most, if not literally all. Are not knowledgeable or don't have an idea of the system that they're walking into if they get hurt.
Correct, Joe. And they're not provided. The employer is not providing them with accurate information.
Exactly.
And so we have been trying to determine over the years if that's intentional or not intentional. But they are not getting the appropriate advice. So that's where I come into play. I have my phone rings every day with injured workers or people have issues on the work site, and they just need advice. They need the proper advice so that they're educated to make the appropriate decisions. So if I can just give you one
sure.
example. So
sure.
many injured workers, when they're hurt at work, they don't report the injury.
Sure, because they don't want to start make waves.
They don't want to make headways. They like their job. They need their job. They need their benefits. So they're hurt at work. They don't report the injury. They don't complete an incident report. And then 2 or 3 weeks down the road, when they decide that they can't deal with the pain anymore, they then report the work injury. And the employer often tells them, well, you didn't report it on the day of the injury. You didn't
right.
complete the incident report. We're going to deny your workers' compensation claim. But under the law, you have 120 days to report your work-related injury. And it's designed for that effect. It's designed to make sure that the injured worker who doesn't immediately report the work injury within a day
creates a loophole but accidentally.
Correct. But you have 120 days to report your work-related injury, and there is no penalty for taking that additional time to report your work
sure.
injury. And the employers often make the employee, the injured worker, feel maybe ashamed or that
yeah,
they're doing something. Right. There's some stigma attached to it. The fact that they haven't reported it the day that they are injured. In fact, it is the reverse. The fact that they're injured at work, do not report it on that particular day, try to work through the pain, try to work through the injury. Don't report it till 2 or 3 or 4 weeks down the road. Doesn't make them less credible. In fact, it makes them more credible. It shows their desire to work. Sure. It shows their commitment to employer.
But that's used against them a lot.
It exactly is used against them. And many of them are told that their claim is being denied because of their failure to report the work injury that day and complete the incident report. So that's what I serve. I serve to give that type of information out to the injured workers so that they understand that their rights are still intact. They have not prejudice. They're entitled to any benefits
sure.
by the fact that they have waited 2 or 3 or 4 weeks to report their work related injury. So that's just one example.
But it's a great example. It's a great, I always throw an example at that, Chris. I don't know if you get calls like this, but for example, let's just take a worker who gets injured on a Friday. It wasn't a catastrophic. Obviously, they didn't get their leg cut off or something like that, but they got hurt. They want to suck it up. You know, let's see how I feel on Monday. Because I don't want to make waves. Next thing you know, they come in. Now, like Paul said, you have 120 days to report the injury legally. Of course, if you don't do it immediately, the insurance company tries to do whatever they can to take you down. Whatever loophole they can. You know, I'm getting sick and tired. We talked about football, of watching these commercials. I mean, how many insurance commercials are we having on these games? Of course, if you use the insurance, they don't mention that they're actually going to deny, deceive, dispute all those things. I get you got all these great commercials, right? They are producer. My favorite one right now is the Geico one. You know where if you're in a horror movie, you make bad decisions. Did you see that one? Yeah, you know, like let's hide in the basement or in the attic. Let's, you know, how about in a running car? Are you crazy? My point is, they spend all this money on this particular subway. How can you get less for more or more for less? All those things, but they don't tell you that if you actually do get injured on the job, if something like that does happen, that you are in a world of crap if you don't have that communication. So the guy comes in on Monday. He's hurt worse than he was on Friday. His neck, his back, his shoulder, his knee is killing him now. He sucked it up for the weekend because he doesn't want to, file a work comp claim. And what happens, Paul?
They deny his claim.
They deny his claim. He did not only wait for 120 days. He waited till Monday because he don't want to mess with the employer. Because, Chris, our union workers don't want to be out of work.
That's correct.
You know what I mean? You spend your whole...
Some can't afford to be out of work.
Exactly.
And that's another thing that comes into play as well. I mean, so what Paul is speaking of is really important, just educating the workers on the fact that you have some rights when you get hurt and you should take advantage of them. But it all starts with our folks being educated. And in our industry, we see a lot of folks in healthcare who are providing help and taking care of others are not taking care of themselves. So when they get hurt on the job, they only know to keep coming back. And then you have these employers who are getting really tricky with denying people and, not letting people be able to take care of themselves.
Well, that is, I've always said that about, and our injured workers program is about that. If what Paul's saying right now is one of the passions that I have. In other words, if you don't get your union and, attorney on that within literally immediately, not because you want to file a claim. Hopefully you'll be better on Monday.
Right.
Right. But you need to. How many times, Paul, are these employers trying to get people to sign documents? Sign documents without any counsel, without any, the intimidation factor, all those things.
Right. So that has happened. It was something that was happening more routinely a few years ago, but it is very, very important that a lawyer reviews all those documents. Because we've seen it, a lot of the documents are bureau documents, workers' compensation bureau documents, and there's no way that an injured worker who their specialty is caring, if you're working with a member of 1199C, I mean, their specialty is CNAs and caring for people in the institutions that they work for. It's obviously they cannot interpret these documents. So they're giving Bureau workers' compensation documents called supplemental agreements, which are very vague and they're difficult to interpret, and they're asked to sign those documents.
Matter of factly, by the way, it's not like a big, oh, by the way, you got to sign this before you go. Oh, okay.
Correct.
You just gave up your rights.
Right, and the people that are advising them what the implications are of the documents, unfortunately, they're on the other side of the table. So it's hard for them to be unbiased when advising the injured worker on whether or not it's in their best interest to sign the docs. So, Joe, sometimes we do have them sign the documents, but I review it first.
You got to review it.
And if it's not going to prejudice their entitlement to benefits, then we have them sign the documents. But again, the important thing is that they have somebody review those documents, they understand what they're signing, and then they make the decision whether
they're
getting
intimidated in one hand, and then they're getting the document in the other. It's a brutal thing, but what we've done, and Chris is actually a part of that, of our nonprofit, is you put together a program so that we work with you, you know, the union endorsed attorney, like, you know, as yourself, from the point of injury, make sure the workers, you know, get that information from day one so that they don't feel alone and so that they understand that they're doing the right thing. That I recommend it like there's no tomorrow. By the way, Paul, thanks for everything you do for our union members and that advice. And we're going to kind of segue, because those laws and rules that you follow and that are a part of the, you know, they are often, impacted by our political candidates, those who are legislators. So now we're going to, you know, kind of segue into our political part of it. What's going on tomorrow here in Philly, Chris?
It's election day. Which is a really, really important day for all of us. Is our civic duty and our rights to get out and cast our votes for some really important seats here in the city of Philadelphia. You have the mayor, you have city council at large, you have the district seats, you have the sheriff, you have city commissioner, you have register of wills. We also have statewide judges that will be running. And one thing I don't think people are paying attention to that will be on the ballot as well tomorrow is the retention judges, which will be on page 2. For these new machines now and the ballots that you'll see tomorrow, we need you guys to go to page 2 and make sure you cast your vote to vote yes for the retention judges. And that's something that's really important as we all pay attention to the criminal justice system and those things that are really, really important to us on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes we don't focus on all of those seats or those races, but it's really important, and we're asking everybody get out and vote tomorrow. And you know, tomorrow's a day where we should spend a lot of time, you know, texting and giving rides to the polls and calling folks and reminding folks to get out, especially if any of us have children who are the age to vote. Hopefully they're registered. If you know any seniors who need rides or need ways to get to the polls, let's make sure we check on them tomorrow to get them to the polls to cast their votes. And it should be a very exciting day. We have also, when you look at tomorrow's race, there's an opportunity to pick up some minority seats in city council that on the at-large side that I don't think a lot of people are focusing on, but there's some really cool progressive candidates that are running, and we should do everything we can to support them.
Yeah, what's your day look like tomorrow?
Oh, man, start off around 7, and you go to the polls and you vote, and then we have a kickoff at the Union Hall around 9:30. That'll be hosted by the mayor, Jim Kenney, for the city of Philadelphia, and also some of our other endorsed candidates for our district seats and our at-large seats. Isaiah Thomas, Kathy Gilmore Richardson will be there. We'll do our kickoff to get our folks who will be going around knocking the doors of union members tomorrow, making sure that they understand that we need them to get out and vote. And here's the list of endorsed candidates by the union. They're going to be out there from about 10 o'clock to about 7 o'clock tomorrow night. And we hope to have a successful day. And we don't want anybody to sit back and take this for granted and take voting for granted and just say, hey, it's an 8-1 Democratic registration in terms of the city of Philadelphia.
Right.
And so the Dems just all got it. This is our political exercise for 2020, which is a really important election that we all have to make sure that we truly get out and vote, especially in the state of Pennsylvania. This is a big, important state as we look to 2020. And this has to be our political exercise tomorrow to see what we can do.
Absolutely. And certainly we certainly have a reference point, because we're dealing with the situation at hand in Washington, D.C., which all started because, I don't think anybody, including, Trump himself, couldn't imagine he was going to win. So my point is, this is a great exercise.
This is why we can't take anything for granted. I mean, we slept some elections in the past, and you get what you pay for. And so we can't do that. We can't afford to do that anymore. And I think it starts with some of the smaller seats all the way to some of the really important seats. I mean, they're all are important, but I think sometimes we don't focus all the way on everything that's on the ballot. And that's why I'm saying tomorrow, make sure that you guys pay attention to your judges, both statewide and locally. Pay attention to the sheriff. Pay attention to at-large candidates. Pay attention to your district races. Pay attention to the mayor. I mean, these are really, really important seats that govern us locally here in the city. And we got to be doing everything we can to get folks who are going to be looking out for us when they get in office, and making sure that the bills and laws and legislation that's passed support workers, but not only just supporting workers, it supports our communities and our folks.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I mean, having said that, working people, and Paul, you know, obviously the world you live in is heavily affected by our you know, our legislators, correct?
Of course. I mean, the legislation that was passed June 24th, 1996, forever impacted and affected the rights of injured workers. And I don't believe that the men and women understood how important it was to push back and fight against such legislation. But I can tell you that it's very, very important, as Chris said, to get out there and vote and make sure we have the people in a position to block legislation that is unfair and will adversely affect the rights of the working men and women in our city.
And the trial lawyers, you guys have, I mean, in other words, in your industry, you guys are well organized and heavily involved in the process, correct?
Correct. I mean, our job is to protect those rights for the working men and women of the city, and we take that very seriously. And we put a lot of time and resources to that end. I mean, it's very, very important. And it's also an education for the people and the public to understand how important it is for us to protect and for them to get out there and vote and to protect their own rights.
It's interesting because, you know, we talk about labor, Chris, being, you know, the voice of not only working people, but the middle class, the, you know, the impoverished, you know, because who's going to do it? You know what I mean? I sense the same thing with the, you know, the attorneys with injured workers who are not injured yet. Somebody's got to protect and be a voice for people, because we're out there trying to make a living and trying to do all kinds of things. Okay, trying to make a living for our families, blinded by somebody's got to be looking out for people. Okay, and I get a kick out of, especially with labor, we take a beating with people that don't understand unions, but they benefit from the standards that we've lived and died for.
Absolutely. I mean, you see people take advantage of and benefit from organized workers every day. And then when it comes time to either join the union or support the union, you have folks who will back up from us because they don't understand the whole thing. And some people don't understand how something like tomorrow, which is a political day and a political exercise, is very important to represent workers in this day and age. I mean, there's legislation, there's laws and bills and every day that's being introduced that sometimes don't support us and look out for us. And especially, again, not just the organized worker, but even just that member in the community. There's a lot of things that are being passed and put into law that will not protect you and will take your rights away. And so you have to pay attention to those things.
Let's be real. Let's talk about, well, first of all, I mean, we're going to talk. I'm not even going to break on this show. We're not going to break, okay? You talk about the deceptive terms, right to work, paycheck protection, all those things. Paul, I know you know this as a labor lawyer and an individual who represents union members, but that's pieces of legislation in all kinds of forms created to deceive, you know, working people. And really, it's once, you know, because the right-wing politicians, they know, they get it. And the right-wing business people, they know what it is. They want to sneak it in under our noses. But that, you know, that stuff lives and dies in the legislature.
Correct. And they're trying to paint a narrative that if they pass legislation that takes away the rights to the working men and women, that it would benefit either the state or it would benefit other workers. So that's the narrative. The narrative is if we take away these rights of the working men and women, the insurance rates will go down, And therefore, they'll be able to pass along that those savings in terms of other benefits to the injured or to other workers. And it's not an accurate narrative. It's just what they want to put out there in the public. They want to win the war of public opinion.
Right.
And so if they win that war, then they hopefully they feel that the legislation will then come thereafter. But it is, you know, the war that they're very committed to winning.
Yeah.
And it's very important to them. And I don't think that the workers have the historical background. They don't understand what is going on, especially the younger workers. That is, when you have labor leaders like Chris, and they have, and these workers have certain benefits, they don't understand necessarily that many years ago those benefits were not there and how those benefits were obtained.
Go in the front door and look at the guy on the picture right there with
Norman Rayford.
Norman Rayford, right at 1199C. You know who I mean. Somebody who died in the middle of an organizing, you know, effort.
Absolutely. I mean, Paul hit it right on the nose. I mean, that's one of the things that you see more and more when you go into the facilities. There, you have some workers who haven't been educated enough to understand that the employer did not provide you with these benefits that are tied to your collective bargaining agreement. It's been the unions who have fought and fought and fought. And to your point, Joe, some have even lost their lives to make sure that we've been in a position to even have a voice within the work setting. And I think we just got to continue to do a better job of, you know, meeting folks where they are and educating folks and letting them know that, particularly when you talk about our union, that our union has always been a union that will fight not only for our members, but for the community. We're a very progressive and strong union in the city of Philadelphia. And, you know, we're here to continue on that message and that fight as we get ready for some really uphill battles that's coming our way.
Well, I want to talk about the members themselves. And by the way, your point's well taken, Paul. I remember when I got in, I was 18 years old. You know, you're born on third base, right? You know, you got all these benefits, and you know, you just think that they, you know, they just came with the union card. Okay, you don't know about, you know, and that's, I think education is such a big part. I think they should have union classes, just union classes for every. See, what I'm from the building trades, so we go to 4 years of apprentice school. So you get kind of a union education as well with it. But most of us, including Chris's workers and us, you learn a lot of that stuff on the job. And so I always thought that we should have union classes for kids who understand, just like you said, Paul, you know, those benefits that we have just are, you know, they just didn't come overnight. Those people, like Chris said, have lived and died for them. Let's talk about educating the union members, because one of my biggest frustrations is, look, if you're a Republican and you have a business, I suggest if that's your priority, you get yourself educated and vote for people who support your interests. I say that because really I'm talking to union members. Educate yourself. How important is it from union members? So, because the last election, Chris, you know, we had so many union members voting for Trump. Next thing you know, we go, they have the Supreme Court right away. He comes to sink us. Like, that's what's going to happen. You're voting for the Supreme Court. Don't be upset, especially with your labor leaders, if you vote against your own interests. If you vote on social issues which are important to you, that's great, but don't be. First thing happens, and my father was a labor leader for 40 years, that the members want to go after the throats of the labor leaders who have been working around the clock for that. It never stops with the political agenda. How important is it, Chris Woods, for a union member to get themselves educated on their union's agenda, the political process, all those things, and how it relates to their jobs?
Absolutely. It's extremely important. I mean, you hit it right on the nose where...
Well, Chris, I'm going to hit it on the nose because I'm extraordinarily smart, but that's not important right now.
Where, you know, I was in those rooms where we did surveys and we had members who clearly indicated that they were going to vote for Trump, and you got to, you know, help them connect the dots. So you voted for Trump, and then we had Janice. And then when Janice came, you know, unions lost the ability to collect on individuals who indicated that they wanted to pay a percentage of the dues and not be a full dues paying member.
But they wanted the
benefits.
They wanted
and the unions
benefits.
Under the law still had to represent those folks. And now we definitely have to represent them. And there's no collection of agency fee or fair share. And it's just, I tell people all the time, you can't walk up in LA Fitness, for example, and say, you know what, I only use the treadmill, so that's all I want to pay for.
Exactly.
You know, it's incredible. But again, you know, you have to be educated. We have to educate our members. We have to connect the dots. We have to help lead them in these fights against the attack on workers, because it's going to happen. It's happening, and it's going to continue to happen. And people want us to continue to be asleep and uneducated and fighting amongst ourselves that we won't see it coming. But there's plenty of things that are out there that are laws that are being passed to take away a lot of the rights of the men and women that we represent every day as union.
Well, you know, it's amazing. And Paul, you know, both of you are you're talking. It's like, to me, it's like monitoring on a constant basis. You know, you're always monitoring these bills that, what's that? In Men in Black? In Men in Black, when Will Smith says to Tommy Lee Jones, there's a, you know, some kind of like, you know, there's an incident that's, you know, it's going to threaten the whole entire solar system. And Tommy Lee Jones goes, there's always something out there that's 2 seconds away from that destroying our solar system. But the people, unfortunately, that, you know, and he says the opposite, but, you know, the only thing keeps things going is they don't know about it. In our situation, people go to sleep at night with their heads on their pillow, depending on, and they don't know, they don't see, especially on a daily basis, what our leaders are dealing with and addressing on a daily basis that threaten the existence of those individuals that, you know, our collective bargaining. It's been part of your life for how long, Chris?
My whole life.
You grew up around it.
I grew up around this stuff. I was lucky enough to have a grandmother who came from a union environment and was a union member and then went on to work for 1199C. And so, you know, I was that kid that just wanted to ride home from school, but you had to go to the union meeting first. You had to be on the picket line. You had to see hospitals like MCP close. And I can remember being there with my grandmother
and other
members of the union, you know, standing up for what they believed in. So I've been around it my whole life. And now I have an opportunity to continue on that legacy and continue on being able to lead for organized workers, not only in our union, but in the city of Philadelphia and around the country. Being the executive director also of the National Union, I'm actually blessed enough to go around the country and fight for workers all day, every day. And so I take it very seriously. And, you know, it's something that I'm passionate about, is bringing folks together and standing up. And having a voice in the work setting is something that's truly important. And having a voice not just in the work setting, but having a voice in our community. These are communities who I look at my community being from North Philadelphia. These are the communities that shaped us as a person, as a kid. These are your friends. These are your family members who
it's the fabric of your life, man.
Absolutely. I mean, and we got to make sure that we, you know, hold on to that and protect those things.
Paul, where did you get your passion for representing workers, and you know your understanding and you know, synergy with the working person?
I've been sitting at the same desk, metaphorically speaking. The office has moved maybe two or three times for 28 years, and so when I began my career at Friedman & Lurie representing unions and their members and their funds 28 years ago, it was actually the impact that I saw on each individual member. So my passion developed over years. And if I can give you an example. So I would represent a woman who has scrubbed the emergency room floor of Jefferson for 27 years. And she had horrible knees, obviously from the repetitive bending, stooping, squatting. And they would deny her claim. And that woman raised her children, raised her grandchildren, and she could no longer work due to a work-related injury. And so I would represent that woman. We would obviously win that case, although that case was denied and fought.
Yeah.
And I saw on the ground floor how that win impacted her life. And so if you take that example, Joe, and you times that by 3,000-4,000 times, that's how my passion grew, from representing individuals and seeing how that hard work and protecting them actually affected them and their families. And people like that never, ever forget, Joe. When you stand up and you fight for someone and their whole lives, not many people have really stood up and fought for them, and you obtain for them what they are entitled to, no more, but not a dollar less, they never forget. And the feeling that I would derive from winning a case for someone like that is how my love and my passion for representing union members grew over the years. And it's something that I've told my children, and they understand it. So I wasn't born into the movement the way Chris was. And so I don't have that as a child. But professionally, I mean, I was raised a certain way to respect people. But it was being on the front lines, fighting for each individual worker and seeing the actual impact that I would have on their lives and how much they appreciate it and how much it would affect them. And that's where how my passion grew.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, that's, you know, I grew up in a union family, obviously, and I remember, you know, my dad, you know,
Shout out to your dad, by the way. He's a great labor leader, man.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that, and hopefully you'll be able to do that in person sooner than later. You know, certainly I learned. Remember, my dad was a foreman for a company, and I won't say the name of the company because they're still one of our contractors. By the way, I don't even know if he was on the executive board yet, but now this is a company. He's got a company truck. So he's working for the company, but he's still heavily involved with the union. I mean, he's starting his political career. And I heard his story one time, and this is how he represented his members. They wanted his men in his gang to pull up, we're iron workers, so steel beams manually. They were unbelievable. My old man was hardcore working, this is all he did his whole life. And he said to him, listen, we need a hoist out here. These are 500-pound beams, something crazy. They were long. They were very long. And he said, I'm not asking my men to do something I wouldn't do. Get my money and get their money too. He always cared about the workers. As he cared about the job. You know, you're wearing both hats. You can't have a union without an employer, so you want to do good for the employer. At the same time, there's a balance. And so, which is where the need for unions come in. So I grew up in that environment also, and have a great passion for it, and a lot of friends like Chris that do a great job that I'm incredibly proud of. And I love what you said, Paul. I love it. I mean, more I learned about injured workers, you know, it's just an extension of what we do, what our labor leaders do, except you're doing it for the injured workers. But at the same time, we all have to understand who's running for what. So whenever legislation is coming about, we need to know. Let's talk about the candidates. We can talk about the candidates on this show. Mm-hmm. Okay, we touched on them a little bit. And Chris, you want to kind of go through your list of individuals that are, we talked about the actual offices and all that stuff.
Right.
But talk about tomorrow in regards to candidates that you're supporting.
Yeah, so the candidates that we're supporting, at the top of the ticket, obviously, we have the mayor, Jim Kenney, who's been a strong advocate for labor.
Absolutely.
In his term as mayor. And so we're looking to send him back and support him, and we're asking folks to go out and make sure that they cast their vote to support Jim Kenney for mayor. Shout out to also Rich Laser, the deputy of
Big
labor,
Rich.
Who, I mean, he's just been incredible. Everything we've called on for him as being the deputy of labor and, you know, helping us stage off some of these attacks and some of these employers who, you know, give our members a hard time or any issue that we have, he's been there to support us. So the mayor's done a great job of putting someone like Rich in play, and he's done a great job in supporting all the unions.
Rich is the best. I love Rich.
And then if you go to, I want to talk a little bit about the at-large candidates. Obviously, you know, we've been pushing for Isaiah Thomas for a long time, and we were able to get him through the primary, and we look forward to him being successful tomorrow in the general election.
Yep.
He's a young, up-and-coming political force in the city. Has a bright mind, is a labor guy, and I think he's going to do a great job being a new member of city council. Also, Kathy Gilmore Richardson, who's been a strong advocate of our union going back to her time working with Councilwoman Blondell Reynolds Brown. We had some issues early on when I came on to 1199C because the National Union represents child care providers in the city of Philadelphia and statewide. And so there was some legislation that was being introduced into council, and some of our child care providers had some issues, especially those in particular, the in-home child care providers had some issues with that particular bill and law. And so we met with Kathy, and Kathy, I mean, she did a phenomenal job of setting up meetings, working with us, taking our phone calls, meeting with our providers individually until we got some things tweaked in that bill and in that law, and it worked out for us. So shout out to Kathy, and we're doing everything we can to support her as well. And then I think obviously our union has been one of the most progressive unions in the city of Philadelphia and across the country, that's been led by our president Henry Nicholas, who's done a phenomenal job and an icon in his right of leading workers across the city of Philadelphia and the country. And we've been progressive. We took on a lot of different issues that sometimes didn't even always affect the hospital workers. But if there was an issue that we felt like we needed to support and get behind, our union was one of those unions who would lead the way. So there's some progressive third party candidates that are running for at large, Kendra Brooks and Nicholas O'Rourke, that, you know, we're supporting as the co-chair of the Working Families Party in Pennsylvania. We're supporting those two young, up-and-coming political great minds that I think would be, again, an addition to what we have on council in the form of our district councilmen and women that we already have. I think these young guys and young women would be a great addition. And Kendra was actually an 1199C member before. So it would be really, really important, and we'll have a proud day tomorrow to be able to elect her to one of the minority seats. And then, you know, you have these statewide judges that we have to make sure we pay attention to who are running for the Superior Court. We have to do everything we can to support those individuals. And then certainly last but not least, here locally, like I told you guys earlier, those retention judges that'll be on page two. One in particular is near and dear to my heart, which is Sheila Wood Skipper, who is the a judge in the Court of Common Pleas. And that's my aunt. And she was my role model and my hero growing up. We came from the same neighborhood, same block. Her mother, who was my grandmother, raised myself and my sister. And, you know, when I was a young guy coming up in North Philadelphia, when there's a lot of different things around you in the community, some that pull you this way, some that pull you that way, my aunt was one of those folks who pulled me in the right direction and showed me that it could be done coming from the neighborhood that we came from. And, you know, she's always been someone who inspired me and pushed me along the way. And always made me believe in myself and keep challenging myself. So I'm asking everybody to personally go out and vote for her tomorrow. I think she's done a great job on
the bench.
Say
your name again.
Sheila Wood Skipper for retention judge on page two. She's been a great, great judge on the bench. Everybody that I talk to from the legal community, whether it's defense attorneys, whether it's prosecutors, whether it's other judges, they all speak proudly about Sheila Wood Skipper, and I'm proud to say that that's my aunt. I'm proud to support her, and I look forward to sending her back to the bench for another 10 years.
Well, I can tell you this. She's got my vote. You know that. And at the end of the day, I love the fact that, you know, you put your money where your mouth is. In other words, you're involved in the process, and I think that's what's really important. You mentioned Henry Nicholas. He's the president emeritus now.
Absolutely.
Certainly I know he's been a big influence on your life, and I love the fact that the leadership. How's your team doing, by the way?
We're doing good. I mean,
shout outs to any of the
oh, yeah, I got a lot of shout outs for my team. But let's start with President Nicholas. Sure. You know, he paved the way. He gave us an opportunity to be here. And, you know, he's challenged us. He's pushed us. And he's put us in position to lead the union for a very long time. Myself and when you go through the rest of my team, Salima Pace, who's the treasurer of our union, this was Henry Nicholas standing up and saying, hey, Salima will be the next treasurer. Elise Ford, who's a vice president, but started off as the she came in the field when I was in the field as a field organizer. Her and I worked together. She also then became the an administrative organizer. Then she became the director of the nursing home, the industry, and then she this past election became a vice president. And so she's another person who was born in the labor movement. Her grandmother was a former executive vice president of the hospital division of 1199C, Donna Ford, and so she comes from it. And so we have a great team over there that are pushing along the way. Also, my other executive vice president, John Hazinski, who came.
By the way, I can never get his name right.
Nobody can.
I know.
When you worked for him, as worked with him as long as we have, we have it down. He's a good guy. He handles all of the hospitals for us over at 1199C. He actually was a member who came up through the ranks, and he was a former administrative organizer. Then he was the director of the nursing home division, and then he became a vice president, and he's just worked his way up the ranks too. So we have a phenomenal team of folks over there at 1199C. We're going to continue to lead from the blueprint that Henry Nicholas laid out for us. I think we have one of the great structures and blueprints for our union, and we're going to do a great job of continuing to lead. We want to be progressive. We want to grow. We want to be strong in the city of Philadelphia. And again, not only just representing our members, but in being in solidarity with all the unions in the city of Philadelphia and anything we can do. I mean, they all know it, because when folks reach out to us, we get right involved. We stand up with them, and we do everything we can to support them.
Well, you know, it's interesting because labor, first of all, you know, I've had the pleasure to meet your team, the ladies and the men. They're all awesome. I love them. And certainly President Nicholas is also, I think he's joined us on several broadcasts, but they're going to write books about that guy if they're not already writing books about him. He walked with Martin Luther King. I mean, certainly, you know, he's unprecedented. And so Chris didn't lick it from the bricks, as they say. You know, he's got, you know, I love the fact that you've come up through the movement, through your family, and you give props to those individuals who made such a big influence on your life.
Absolutely.
But also a good example, and kind of, Paul, you know, you give counsel to individuals who may not even, when they get injured, who may not even have a case. Well, that's what I love about labor. You know, we get involved in fights. You know, you look at the immigration issues. We're down there walking for individuals who are getting, you know, kids that are being, you know, just because we care about that. They're not union members, and I'm not trying to put a feather in our cap, but I will tell you this. We do not promote ourselves all that well. I mean, you know, like, we all remember that, but we're always out there trying to help people. You talk about the community, you know, who, you know, trying to help those who are less fortunate. And that's what I'm really proud. That's why I love being a part of the moment. That's why I love the movement, and I love being a voice for the movement. And the fact that I've gotten into the injured workers realm with our program makes me appreciate, you know, individuals like Paul Himmel, who have dedicated his life to, you know, to a certain part of our unexpected part of our business, that where the bottom can literally drop out. And I could say this, most of our labor leaders, and it's an interesting contrast, because most of our labor leaders are so busy securing, procuring work benefits and all those things. Here's how it goes. Somebody gets injured, you get the call, you know, go over to Paul, go see Paul. It would be awesome, but a lot of times you get that call after they're beat up. Mm-hmm. Like, they're beat up, they've been beat up to a system, they don't have any money coming in. And at that point, what ends up happening is, you know, that's a lot of times when you get the case. I try to put education on them so that individuals can get counsel from day one, so they don't have to go through a system and sign things and do things where the system is, where they think that, You know, when you grow up in the morning, right? How much time we got? 3 minutes. Where you know, we're so used to our doctor. And by the way, you're listening to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. Our guests are Chris Woods, president of District 1199C here in Philadelphia, and Paul Hamill of Friedman Lawyer Workers' Compensation, the head of the Workers' Compensation Department. You're so used to getting beat, you know, going to your doctor when you're a kid, right? And your whole family trusts your doctor because that's what you do, right? You know, you get injured, you get sick, you get a cold. In workers' compensation, if you have no counsel at the beginning from day one, you're not going to know that those doctors are not your friends. They work for somebody else, which is confusing. I've gotten so many calls. This guy's looking at me. I can't even look my shoulder. He's telling me I'm okay. I don't even, you know, so... You know, we only have a couple minutes, like 2 minutes left, Bob, but that's one of the reasons why it's important for people to get a consultation immediately so they don't fall into those pitfalls.
That is correct, Joe. I mean, when I receive a call from an injured worker, I understand that I am a reflection. If it's, let's say it's an 1199C member, I'm a reflection of Chris Woods, that he is out there doing what he needs to do to run the union, to protect
so, and there's a trust factor that he trusts you. That
and when a call, correct, when a call comes in to me for a question that I've educated the member on what their rights are, I'm a direct reflection of Chris Woods and that union. So my service, my commitment, my advice, and my response time, and to making sure all the members are advised promptly and properly is not just good for the member, but it's also a reflection of the union. It's good for the union. So it's very, very important to service the members and provide them with the timely information that they need to make the appropriate decisions, again, to protect their benefits.
And their families. Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you both enough for, first of all, being the people you are, number one. And, you know, great Chris is like a family member to me, and so I am couldn't be more proud of what he's doing. And for what you do for your members and for labor and the people in the community and Paul for what you do for our injured workers, I want to thank you both for being a part of the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. I want to thank our listeners for joining us. We're sponsored by Weinemann Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries, and I want everybody to do one thing tomorrow. And what's that, Chris?
Get out and vote. Make sure you guys get out and vote tomorrow. Very important.
Absolutely. Get out and vote. I'm your co-host, Joe Dougherty, for Paul Hamill and Chris Woods. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks.